You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
This week's bits. The best news nuggets from Breakfast and The Wire from this week.
Atamariye, Kohana Ross Tokuingwa, and welcome to this week's bits. As it is coming up to the election soon, our Wire team are using each week to focus on important issues we are looking at within political parties. This week, we focused on our environment and what we need to be doing about it. First up, 95BFM's Jack Marshall spoke to Gary Taylor, the CEO of New Zealand's Environmental Defence Society, about the state of New Zealand's land, air and sea. He also spoke about parties' policies and how we head forward after the election.
Well, let's start with air or atmosphere. I think obviously the key issue and the biggest environmental issue in fact facing the planet is climate change. And so what we're looking for there from political parties, I think the main outcome we'd like to see is commitment to the idea of creating a climate commission. And a climate commission would provide independent planning and oversight for the transition to a low carbon economy. If we're going to meet the Paris Agreement commitments, we need to get to somewhere near net zero greenhouse gas emissions by the middle of the century. So a climate commission would be the key thing on the climate change topic.
Is anyone actually proposing a climate commission?
Yes, my understanding is that the Greens, Labor, New Zealand First, the Opportunities Party and the Māori Party are all committed to that in some shape or form. The National Party at our conference last week said that it thought that the idea had potential legs and it was thinking about it.
Okay, so that looks like it's coming then. So at least one of these kind of issues is going to get some forerunner. And so then on to land.
Well, I think the key thing about land is, you know, the loss of biodiversity. New Zealand still has this appalling track record of biodiversity loss, which started, you know, around about 1200 AD when people first arrived, and then a second flush when colonists arrived from Europe, where the pace of extinction picked up. We have this unique biodiversity in New Zealand because, you know, our ecology evolved over 80 million years of isolation, and we don't have mammalian predators, or we didn't have mammalian predators until people arrived. So I think that the key thing there is probably proper funding for the Department of Conservation's core budget, a commitment to properly fund and resource the predator-free New Zealand target or campaign, and I think also protecting New Zealand's outstanding landscapes, which are, of course, an important part of our tourism offering, tourism now being our biggest export earner, bigger than dairying.
Yeah, and just touching on tourism, taxes towards tourists coming in, is that something EDS supports?
Yes, we're very supportive of the idea of a border tax for incoming tourists that would go into a combination of improving the infrastructure for tourists. You know, to be frank about it, more toilets, particularly in the high volume areas, but also some of that money going to improving our management of our natural world.
The most probably controversial we've got at the moment is fresh water. So there's been a lot of policies coming out, most notably Labor with their tax on aquifer water. Where does EDS stand on this?
Well, I think, it's really interesting, the fresh water debate. This is the first time since the early 80s when, the clearing of native forests, state-owned native forests, became a very hot political topic. So the freshwater debate, this is kind of redolent of that. I've never seen a topic so front and centre of the political argument as freshwater. So clearly there's We've made a lot of improvements in freshwater management over the last few years. We've got a national policy statement that's been through three iterations now, providing guidance and setting environmental bottom lines. But pricing, I think, is something whose day has come. Pricing is a very useful tool when you've got a resource that you want to encourage to best use, and it's also a very useful tool when it comes to trying to reduce pollution.
In terms of these kind of key areas, which policies and which parties are doing really well on these key points? So for instance, who's going to be funding DOC, and especially with the kind of loss of diversity, who's really looking to implement things for predator-free 2050?
Well, in a way they all are. You know, this is where it gets a bit nuanced, and it's actually quite encouraging from my point of view that you know, we don't have kind of any anti-environment parties in Parliament anymore, except maybe ACT. You know, even New Zealand First at our conference was espousing some pretty progressive environmental policies. National has kind of done, you know, a sort of a moderately reasonable job over the last 9 years. You know, you can't deny that. There's a Blue-Greens faction within that party that, you know, I'd certainly want to encourage to keep going. But Labor and the Greens together have probably, by any objective analysis, got, you know, the best environmental policies collectively. But, you know, I mean, the environment isn't the only thing that people vote on. So I don't think there's any sort of danger in the offerings that the political parties have that we should be especially concerned about. It's looking at the detail, at who's promising most, and I'd certainly encourage people to, you know, to look at that online.
Jack then went out into the streets to ask people if we are doing a good enough job with the environment.
How do you feel we're doing on the environment at the moment?
Terribly. I don't think we're paying it any respect at all from the point of view of a community. I mean, just from the little thing of picking up a piece of rubbish when you go past to, you know, what we're doing with the greater environment around dairy, you know, around our waterways. You know, it's time we actually pulled up our socks and did better.
Yes, we are. We've got a vegan sausage sizzle in the quad at Auckland Uni today at 11 to 3.
I think they could be doing more. I think obviously we have a lot of great ideas coming out of the Green Party regarding environment and shifting towards that, but Nationals hasn't been doing a terrible job either.
It's that false setting that we want to say that it's beautiful here, which it is, but it's not to a degree that it's demonstrated.
Have you seen much change in the past kind of 10 years, 20 years in the environment?
You mean in the city? Or
yeah.
Where are we staying?
Around Auckland.
Yeah. By the way.
For good or bad?
For good.
For good? Yeah, so we've got some positive coming up. Yeah. Is there anything you think we should do that's like number one in the environment that we should like sort out?
Yeah, less cars on the road.
Less cars on the road. Electric cars?
Yeah.
Self-driving cars?
No, I mean the electric cars good.
Yeah.
Less pollution.
Yeah, all those Teslas, that's nice. Yeah. But they're expensive.
They are. That's the worst part, they can't afford it.
Let's be a leader in this whole thing rather than lagging behind and going,
clean,
it's all too hard.
Clean, New Zealand.
Yeah, well, you know, that's bullshit at the moment.
We then spoke to Green Party leader James Shaw on the party's policies and views on our government ahead of the election.
I guess there's three main components in our environmental policy. One is around restoring and replenishing our endangered bird species. And so we've spoken about you would have heard kind of last year we talked about the need to put in place a levy on international tourists coming to New Zealand. And that would help to pay for tourism infrastructure, but more importantly, it would also help to pay for the predator-free effort, which is currently a nice idea but completely unfunded. And so the idea there, of course, is that, you know, what would happen is if we were actually successful in that mission of you know, getting rid of predators from New Zealand, that would allow our endangered bird species to really flourish and to thrive. Then a few weeks back, the adjunct piece of that we said is that we wanted to double the number of Department of Conservation rangers on the ground, and to inject some new funding into the Department of Conservation's efforts on the front line, and increasing the amount of predator control work that they do. And so that's simply an injection of new funding.
The levy that you talked about that's going to raise money to make New Zealand predator-free, is it going to sort of make it more difficult for people coming over maybe from the islands to visit family and who have to come over quite often and sort of aren't coming over to sort of enjoy our native bush or anything? They're just here to see family and they come on a regular. Is that going to affect those sort of people?
Yes, it's all international visitors. So about 80%, I think it's 81% currently, of all people who come to New Zealand visit our kind of natural environment. 50% of them visit the Department of Conservation estate. So, you know, the vast majority of people who come to this country come here to enjoy our natural environment to some extent, whether that's conservation land or otherwise.
Right, and so this levy is going to work towards making New Zealand predator-free by 2050. Some people say that that idea is sort of a bit futile and we shouldn't be sort of trying to recreate prehistoric habitats when it's clearly not possible. Do you believe that this is really the best way to conserve New Zealand's native species?
Yes, I do, and I don't think that making New Zealand predator-free is the same as restoring the entire country to its prehistoric state. You know, but we know that the main cause of the endangerment, the risk to our native bird species, is from rats, mice, possums, stoats, and wildcats. And so, you know, if we were successful in the effort to rid the islands of those predators, then that would allow huge numbers of bird species that are currently at risk of extinction to bounce back from the edge. You've got to remember that the Department of Conservation is actually responsible for about a third of the country's total land mass. So if we were able to go predator-free, and it is a massive challenge, I mean, nobody's underestimating the size of the challenge. If we were able to do that, then, you know, combined with the fact that we do have large areas of the country set aside for conservation, then you would see those bird species bounce back.
Hmm.
Then the chair of the Blue Greens Committee, Andrew Bailey, spoke to 95BFM's Kelly Enright about the freshwater policies National has announced and their commitment to the Paris Agreement.
Yeah, so it's always been the case that people can use water and for various different activities. What we've seen is that a number of new companies come in who are taking over existing consents. So we're concerned about it, and what we've done is we've asked a group to look at it in more detail. It's on the face of it sounds bad, but to how you deal with it is the issue, because once you start saying to one particular group you have to pay a tax on it or whatever it might be, then how does that ripple? Because the issue with bottled water, if it's straight bottled water, that's fine. But a lot of the bottling companies, such as making Coca-Cola or making beer, they use large volumes of water as well. So getting a clear definition around it is quite a difficult issue, and that's why we've asked the technical group to look into it.
So the public sentiment, I think, here is not about maybe the quantity or the statistics, but it's the sense that something precious, you know, in New Zealand that is being exploited for commercial gain, and there's no benefits coming back to New Zealand communities or back into the water bodies that are being extracted from. So just wondering how National feels about taking a very scarce resource from New Zealanders and there not being any sort of repayment for that.
Yeah, so you've just raised the issue, which is if it's a foreign-owned bottling company, should they be paying a tax or a royalty on it? If it's a locally owned bottling company, should they? And so in that introduction, that's just what you raised there. So the issue is, how do you work through that? And so it's on the face of it, it's a very easy issue, and we all understand the public sentiment. But actually, when you start to get in underneath it, you need to work out where the point of differentiation. So if we end up saying, let's stop foreign owners taking New Zealand water and sending it overseas. That's pretty easy. Are you going to just do with bottled water or carbonated water, or are you going to now talk about other drinks? Because a lot of our bottling companies also owned overseas, but they supply the New Zealand market. So is it just the New Zealand portion, or is it the overseas portion? That's why I'm saying the issue is a little bit more complicated than most people think. But we understand the sentiment. We understand the issue that people are worried about.
So also, talking about how you're going to plan to clean up rivers and lakes to make them swimmable, so we're moving to a system which requires councils to improve the swimmability of their rivers and lakes over the year. And so under your new proposal, over 50,000 kilometres of waterways will be improved for swimming, which we will see more places that are suitable for swimming more often. How do you plan on doing this?
Well, let's go back to a little bit of stuff. So, Kelly, it wasn't until we introduced the measurement of water that suddenly the issue became apparent. And so all this debate now about water quality has only become about because National Party introduced required measurement of water quality bodies around New Zealand. Because that then gives you the position, the start point to actually work out which are the waterways that are clean and which are the dirty. So that's been the most important thing that National's done, is actually bringing this issue out into the public fore.
Mm-hmm.
What we've require now of councils is that we have specified the minimum level, and where we set it is that we require 90% of all rivers and lakes to be swimmable by 2040. Now most people don't understand what that means, but that the level that we've introduced, it takes into account the E. coli and all the different other things, nitrates and water, is actually on par with the best European standards. So the New Zealand standard is on par with the European standards for water. And what we're requiring councils now to do is go away and measure their water quality in each of their waterways in their catchment areas. And if it is below that minimum requirement, which the government has specified, they then have a requirement either to do something about it or actually required to go and consult with the community as to why they were going to keep it below that minimum specified level, and that's for the community to make that decision.
That was this week's Bits. To listen to the full interviews, visit 95bfm.com and check out the Bcasts.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.